it's hard to listen to yourself talk. A lot of people have that anxiety when they hear themselves talk. So imagine listening to yourself on a track and like trying to make a vocal. That was a huge struggle for me. And sometimes it still is, but I've gotten more comfortable with it just honestly because of the support that we've been getting. But you're so vulnerable as an artist.
Auxoro is a media platform designed to help you think better, create engaging conversations, and inspire you to live with purpose, aka do dope shit. We host podcasts like the one you're about to listen to, make videos, write articles, and share the work of interesting people. Whether we speak with doctors, designers, athletes, or music artists, we know that this conversation will leave you with a different perspective, and we hope that this conversation inspires you to live a more fulfilling life. If you'd like to keep up with all things Auxoro, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and subscribe to our twice monthly newsletter. In this action-packed email, we send you the latest Auxoro content, as well as articles, podcasts, books, shows, and other content we find exciting and useful. Go to auxoro.com or visit the link in the podcast description to join over 1,000 others who get the newsletter. Also, you can now support Auxoro on Patreon for $2, $5, or $10 per month. On Patreon, you get early access to all podcast episodes, discounts on merchandise, and one Patreon exclusive episode each month. We're an independent platform with no outside investors, and we rely on listeners like you to keep the conversation going. Go to patreon.com/Auxoro to become a patron, and thank you for the support. This time, I sit down with East Main, a producer rap duo based in Chicago, who also go by the names Jeremy and Daniel when they're not in the studio. On this episode of the podcast, East Main discusses underrated quarantine activities, tips to reduce anxiety around smoking weed, the possibility of alien life, their latest EP, Autopilot 2, how to regain lost focus, and more. I had a fucking blast with this conversation, so I'll let you get right to it. Without further ado, please enjoy this deep dive with East Main. So, to start things off, I usually like to begin with a slightly unconventional question to break the ice.
Sure.
And I'll preface this question with the fact that I've been on a binge of Joe Rogan UFO podcasts and also the documentary that Bob Lazar did on Netflix. So I've been deeply entrenched in the UFO Area 51 shit. Do you think there are other forms of intelligent life in the universe?
100%, yes.
Yeah. For sure.
What makes you think that?
Have you ever seen this is so random, but have you ever seen Pillow Talk by Lil Dicky?
Yes.
That immediately, I love that video. My mind went to that video, but you go ahead first.
I think space itself is just mind blowing. Like, we can't even really begin to realize like just how massive our universe is. And there's so many different galaxies in the universe. It's like, how could we be the only form of life out there? I mean, it's crazy. Like, every time I think of it, it just makes me like...
Space is kind of scary to me. There's definitely other forms of life. It's just, you know, like the galaxies are infinite. So I think there's got to be some other one out there. But I don't know, no idea where.
Yeah, I was listening to the multiverse theory, which was kind of freaking me out. That basically saying how the universe is infinite, but then within that universe, there's also an infinite number of universes. So there's basically 100% chance of there being another universe where someone exactly like you is doing exactly what we're doing right now. And then there's infinite copies of that. So not only is there infinity in terms of the expansion, but there's also an infinite number of universe. If you believe in that multiverse theory,
I can't even wrap my head around that.
Yeah. I feel like that's a thought that was derived from somebody who was on acid and then like figured out it might actually be real.
Oh, yeah.
It's like
yeah.
deja vu, kind of.
Right? I feel like if you're going to be in that field, you can't not do acid or shrooms or smoke weed.
Because yeah.
it's like you have to feel like the universe is communicating with you.
That's a good point.
I've definitely heard our roommate Dylan talk about the multiverse theory before, and I can't wrap my head around it. It'd be so trippy to think about that.
Yeah. And I just realized this is the perfect question because I have the Elon Musk SpaceX posters in the back that my brother bought a while ago. So
those are dope.
Yeah, those are dope. We were talking about that.
Like when you walked away, he was like, those are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, props to my brother. They were maybe $20 online and he got the frames for it and shit. And I think Elon Musk just put them out for free where anyone could just download a print.
That's dope.
I wish I saw that.
They're awesome, honestly.
For people that may not be familiar with East Main, which they fucking should be, go check it out. Go check out their music. What are your backgrounds and how did you guys meet?
We're both from a town called Cary, Illinois. It's about 50 miles outside of Chicago. And we met each other actually in seventh grade through travel baseball. Like playing baseball together is how we became friends. Went to high school together, went to different colleges, but ultimately ended up moving both back to Chicago. I think when it comes to like our style of influence, we grew up listening to music together. We have a lot of the same styles. They're pretty broad. But I think that this project really is a convergence of the similarities and the differences that we have from our influences.
Very similar. I mean, we've known each other for 13 years now. It's like a second family to me. But yeah, we met in baseball and, you know, sports was just kind of what brought us together. We always had similar views on our style of music and we wanted to do something that we both liked, but kind of meet in the middle. And that's it didn't really start off as like a serious thing. It kind of was just for fun to see what we could do.
It was just kind of jamming at first.
Yeah, we were just jamming. He'd play some piano, I'd play some guitar. We just like had some fun. And then one day he was like, no, you want to like actually try and make some stuff like and release it maybe in the future? And I was like, yeah, why not? What do we have to lose? Nothing to lose, right? And we just started. And then, you know, we got feedback from our friends and our peers and they were like, yo, you should like do something with that. So
what was the first time that both of you sat down with the intent of making music that you wanted to release, where it wasn't just, all right, we're going to fuck around, but we're actually going to do this?
Hey guys, I wanted to interrupt this episode real quick to let you know that Auxoro also produces a short form podcast called The Aux. The Aux brings you a daily dose of uncensored wisdom to jumpstart your life. 10 minutes or less, no bullshit, no topic off limits. You can subscribe to the show by searching The Aux, A-U-X, wherever you listen to podcasts. For all the latest Auxoro content, you can follow us on Instagram at Auxoro, Twitter at Auxoro Mag, and hit us up for our twice monthly newsletter with the link in the podcast description. Now, back to the episode.
I actually remember distinctly. So we shared a room in the last place that we were in for a little bit. Like we had two beds in a single room, but it was good for rent, but it was like actually fucking awful for a few months.
Rent's high these days.
Bro, was it that bad? Damn.
The privacy.
I guess it was that bad.
regardless, I was already making music because I'm the producer and he's the one who does the lyrics. Mm-hmm. I was doing my production with my roommate Dylan for another project that I was on, you know, of Miracosta.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just kind of like fiending to experiment with other kinds of production. You know, you might be making beats, but you don't always want to make the same kind of stuff. So you want to just like play around and see what else you could do. And Jeremy had always like expressed some interest in putting his vocals down on something. And I talked to him and I was just kind of like, hey, like, why not just like make something? You know, let's not take it seriously, but let's actually try to make a full song, see where it can go. And we made something that we will never use to this day. But at the same time, it was such a fun process. And I think we worked so well together because we've known each other for so long that it made just a lot of sense to see where this could go.
So since you guys met through sports, is there a common thread between the way you think about sports and the way you think about music?
Oh, absolutely. We're both super competitive people. I'm sure you are as well. So it's like when we have an idea in mind, I mean, we have our days where it's hard to come up with an idea and stick with it, but we have our moments where it's like, if we find something and it clicks, we won't stop until it's like pretty much done or until we have like a clear pathway of where we're going to go.
Yeah.
I think also too, you know, we live together right now. So every day we could wake up and we have a studio right here and we're pushing each other a lot. So like I'll be making beats constantly and, you know, he'll be right there like listening the whole time, trying to figure out his angle. I just think it pushes us to work even harder. Cause like we really have made this like our full-time work outside of what our like our actual paying jobs are, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have felt this way transitioning from sports and then into business and music, but when I was so entrenched with baseball all the way through college, I was in the competitive mindset 24/7. It was very hard. It was very hard for me to let go of that. And I saw everything as a zero sum game. So if someone else was doing better than me, then on some deeper level, like I knew that it wasn't taking away from me, but on a very deep level, I fucking hated it because I thought, oh, they're going to take my spot on the team, or, oh, this guy's going to get drafted over me or whatever. And it's not allowing me to do something. But now I'm of the opinion more that it's more important when you compete than how you compete. So I think being able to turn off that switch and realize when I'm podcasting, the only person I'm competing with is myself and that I just want to be better than my last podcast. And then when it comes to the business side of it, where, you know, I actually have to make financial decisions and people are choosing who to promote on what playlist or what blogs in a featured podcast, then I'll kind of turn that switch on. But now I've definitely gotten better at turning it off and saying like, chill the fuck out. It's not a zero sum game. There can be a lot of great podcasters. Someone else's content doesn't take away from yours. And after baseball, it took me a while to get there. I would say 2 or 3 years to like totally chill out. I'm still working on it, but is that something that you guys kind of had to deal with?
For sure. I think both of us have like a similar mindset to sports. We actually both played baseball in college. He actually stuck it out for full 4 years, but
oh, fuck
I was at D3 though. Man. I quit after a year. But I think like you were talking about, you know, that you need to make each one better than the next. Like that's what we're trying to focus on. We're trying to make original enough music so that it's not competing with, you know, like we're not trying to compete with some main players out there. We're trying to make our own style of music and we just want every project to be better than the previous one.
Yeah, I think we're just competing with ourselves too, like you are. If we try to compete with like some of the big names and it's just never going to happen. And we're not trying to be like, you know, Drake level famous or like those. That's just not something that we're striving for. We want to keep like a niche audience, niche listener group and just ride that out. And hopefully, you know, our stuff can inspire people and give them the positivity that they need in their life.
So in quarantine, something I've been paying attention more to is how I'm focusing and kind of playing around with getting myself to refocus. Cause if you're, you know, if you're in your apartment the entire day, it's hard to build new habits in places where you're used to just relaxing. It's hard to be productive in a place where you're used to coming home at the end of the day and just turning off. So for you in quarantine, especially, how do you regain lost focus?
That's a great question. I think
that's a really good question.
Cause I think, we've gone through a couple of slumps where we don't want to work on music because by the time the day's over, you're just so mentally exhausted that you just want to relax and do nothing.
You just got to dig deep. I think like Daniel said, like at the end of a long day, the last thing sometimes we want to do is mentally focus on something. We're pretty drained. I think that we get motivation from each other. So Daniel's very, very good at when Daniel has his mindset on something, he does not stop. I mean, this kid literally doesn't stop. It's from how he grew up. And he's actually helped me grow as a person too in that sense, because yeah, you know, I played sports and baseball is a grind and everything, but I'm kind of a chill person. So I may need a little kick in the pants to get going, but he's definitely helped with that. And we kind of feed off of each other. So after a long day, Daniel, it really is how it works. Is Daniel just like start making a beat and then it, like maybe my head will perk. I'll be like, bro, that's pretty dope. And then I'll just like sit on the couch and I'll just like start bobbing my head and I'll just like start writing shit down. And next thing you know, it's like we got In a While made, you know, it's like, it's crazy. Like that's just kind of how it happens. So we just try to focus and like build off each other.
Yeah, we work. I mean, the studio we're at right now where we make music is also where we work. Like we switch off at this desk right here. So it can be tough to be like in the same mental space where you're working. But I think we kind of make it a casual thing. And like as soon as you know it, like 2-3 hours have passed and we've made almost a full song.
Is there any activity you do specifically, like walking outside or having a drink or just like watching something creative, like watching something creative or getting high as fuck. Shit kind of helps.
It's probably going to smoke a bowl before we get into anything. We'll just like hit a bowl and then get in the mindset and like turn off the lights, like, and then start like getting some beats and some synths and just like seeing what works.
Yeah. I don't know if I was like this really when I was still coming to Chicago pretty frequently, but within the past couple of years, for whatever reason, I've just been getting super anxious when I smoke. And so I took a break for a while, but being high is some of the best memories of my life, most creative moments. So over the past few months, I've slowly been building back my tolerance. Like I'm approaching it like a workout in the gym. I'm literally just like, all right, we're going to take two sets of one rip and then we're just going to see how it feels and then build back up the tolerance. Cause eventually I want to be able to just get high as fuck on a podcast and be fine. But right now I'm just like, I probably would just say nothing the entire time and
I get that. You know, we've both had times in our lives where I think it's given us anxiety. And I've definitely taken a couple breaks. But for music, it really does inspire a ton of creativity. It helps you get into like a different mindset, different perspective where you maybe just are like zoned in and thinking a little differently.
Yeah. And it's funny that you bring that up. I've had a lot of anxiety too with smoking. I took a lot of time off from it. And it took a while for me to figure out the mindset of when I'm starting to feel that anxiety, like where I go mentally to escape that. And it took a while, but once I figured that out, it was easier for me to just focus and come back to reality. Yeah. But in one of our songs, Unrelated on Autopilot 2, I actually wrote, "Now I'm faded and a little wasted. This is a state of mind where I'm most creative." So, like that's kind of part of the reason. I mean, it just helps sometimes to get into that mindset and just like chill out and, you know, think about life. And that's helped us, you know, especially through, you know, when we have our moments where we're stressed out for sure.
Yeah. It's an escape sometimes.
Yeah.
So for someone like me who's listening to this, that's either taking a break from weed or slowly building back their tolerance, what advice or what sort of tips would you have? What would you tell someone that wanted to decrease their anxiety around weed and in the moment, just like make sure that they have a good high?
Well, first of all, I think I have a couple good tools. I think one, mix in CBD. Mm-hmm. If you mix in like CBD half and half with weed, you'll like get a much more mellow version with more like relaxed feeling. And I think that that's a great way to like smooth into it. Another thing is an app that I've used like for meditation, Calm. It's a huge help, I think, in terms of just like mental health and also to like make you know how to relax and like relieve anxiety when it does come. Because I think a big key whenever I get to that kind of level is just rolling within and not like resisting that feeling. Mm-hmm. Just embracing it on some level.
So you meditate after you smoked or before you
smoked?
This
is actually just in a different time. Sometimes I'll meditate when I'm high, but like most of the times when I do meditate, it's during the week, during the workday when I'm not. Like it'll be like during lunch or anything like that. But it teaches you a lot of good mental practices of how to escape anxiety or like how to escape stress whenever you're feeling that way?
I need to start mixing in CBD because when I first started smoking my freshman year of college, I didn't feel anxious for 2 years and I just had no respect for the power of weed at all. Yeah. So I would just, there's never a thought in the back of my mind for 2 years that, oh, like you could have a panic attack on this drug. It was always just like, yeah, I'm going to keep smoking until I can't anymore. And then once I had my first panic attack, I was like, oh fuck, like this is a pretty crazy drug. So I definitely need to start mixing it up a little bit.
Yeah, I would say too, for me, what's helped a lot is before I even smoke, I just think like, how do I feel right now? You know, just normally. And then after I do, I just like go back to, well, I know what I felt like before this. Why would I feel worse now? And that's helped me a little bit and just brought me back to where I was before. And that just kind of helps me chill out a little bit.
So what do you guys disagree about the most?
In general?
Oh,
like yeah, it could be music. Could be music. Could be in general.
In music, I know what we disagree about the most. So like in terms of style, like we have a lot of similar styles that we listen to growing up, but it might differ a little bit now where like I like some stuff that's maybe a little bit more on the house side or a little bit more experimental and electronic. And his tastes sometimes could be more mainstream than mine, I might say, but also like a little bit slower, maybe a little bit more chill. I listen to a lot of ambient music, but like I think his like overall is probably more chill. And so we've clashed a lot about like the tempo and like basically the speed of like our percussion within the songs. And I think we've found a good medium now, but like that's one of the biggest things we've had disagreements over.
Is there an example of an artist you could give that portrays that difference? Like Daniel, you said, I kind of tend towards more of this sound and Jeremy adds this more mainstream sound. Are there two artists that you would think of that might fit that mold?
The artist that I always talk about the most that inspires me for this project is Catronata.
I love Catronata. So there's not like a disagreement there, I wouldn't say.
Yeah, just sometimes I think, you know, like our style with in terms of lyrics and rap doesn't always fit over a housey like funk inspired beat as well as it does with maybe a more like acid rap kind of sound.
Jeremy, what about you? Is there an artist that kind of fits your mold that you revisit often?
For me, like Mac Miller. I mean,
yeah,
I love his vibe and it's just, it's something that I want to emulate. I want to make my own style, but he's definitely somebody that I look up to. And Goldlink is a big one too, which a lot of people are surprised by, but he's got this flow to him that like no matter what beat you put on, he's going to make it sound so good. And to get to that point one day is something that I want to really aspire to do.
So what's the breakdown in terms of production versus lyrics and rapping? Is it completely isolated where Daniel, you're doing the production and Jeremy, you're writing the lyrics and rapping, or is there some sort of overlap there?
For the most part, it is isolated, but we're both heavily involved with like, he's right there when I'm doing the production, tells me when he doesn't like something or when he really likes something. And same thing with for when he's doing lyrics, I tell him when he's like reading out what he's wrote, I tell him, you know, I don't know if that's the right direction or I think that you should maybe emphasize this a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So we're really involved. But yeah, like that is our specialty. He fully does the lyrics and I fully do the production.
Yeah, we'll have moments where, I mean, we don't really disagree on a lot of stuff, which is great. I mean, we work together really well. So when it comes to music, if we do disagree on something, we just find a middle ground that works for the both of us. Mm-hmm. And it usually turns out to be really good. So yeah, we don't really butt heads too often, but when we do, we come to like a resolution.
I know what you're thinking like most of the time. He knows what I'm thinking too. Like if I got something up like and I know he's not going to like it, I'm not going to keep doing it because I know what he's going
to
say.
He likes to mess with me a lot though. Sometimes he'll be like, what do you think, man? And he knows that I'm like not feeling it. He'll just do it anyways. But yeah.
So I'll ask Daniel first. What is an insight about production that Jeremy brought to your attention that you ended up changing or tweaking in some way?
Great question. Love that question.
That is a good question. You know, I think one of the biggest insights he's brought to my attention about production. I think he's really self-aware of what the listener will hear from their perspective. You know, like a lot of times I'm really caught up in some of the nitpicky small details about things. And I think his perspective is really from the other side. And it shows like, hey, like this isn't something that is going to be a big deal, or this is something where I think if you just cut out like a tiny bit, it'll make it 100 times better. He's really good at bringing in the other viewpoint where, like, you know, I think a lot of times I'm overly critical and he could be more optimistic about certain things. So,
yeah, I mean, I think of it as like, okay, when I'm scrolling through music on Spotify and, you know, on Fridays and stuff like that, like what would I download and what would I put on my playlist? And we try to make stuff that fits that, right? Because you want to like your music. Why would you make stuff you don't like? So for Daniel and me, it's definitely the creativity with lyrics. I mean, I, like Daniel mentioned, you know, before he actually introduced me to Odessa, I was a little bit more mainstream, you know, loved rap music, was like all we listened to in high school. So had to kind of broaden my horizon a little bit, which he helped me with. And, you know, I'll be writing lyrics and he'll be like, you know, it sounds great, but I really think you should try and like really dig deep and be more creative. So he's definitely helped me with that. And we've come up with some really cool stuff because we've both been able to, you know, learn from each other and grow from each other.
Yeah, Daniel will remember this because we went out after the Odessa show, but there was a time back in the fall of 2017 when I was first kind of starting my music blog where I was just doing phone interviews and writing articles. Odessa at the United Theater in Chicago? The UIC Center?
It was at the UIC Pavilion.
UFC Pavilion. That was the first show that I ever got an all-access pass to cover, where you could walk around backstage, you could go in the photo pit, take photos, shit like that. So I showed up with my camera and I took some pretty dope pictures. I'm not a photographer at all, but just being at that show and seeing the artists backstage before they go on, just kind of being a fly on the wall, and then literally looking up. There's one moment I remember where I'm literally looking up at Naomi Wilde singing Higher Ground. And I started to cry. Like I literally was like, man, this is the most beautiful moment of my fucking life. I love this song. Like if I wanted to just like sweep her leg and like trip her off stage, I could have done it. But in that was like one of the most transformational moments in my life where I was like, I'm not gifted in making music, but I want to do whatever I can to be around it and to be around artists and to be around the concert experience.
I think that's so dope. Like the passion that we could tell you a passion. Honestly, like I heard about you like a couple years ago and then your name just kept popping up. And like, no, once we started this music thing, he told me that you reached out to him and I'm like, yeah, dude, like, of course we want to be honest, but that'd be awesome. So we can definitely tell that your passions are and we love that.
And you got to know Naomi Wilde like outside of that too. You got to like meet her actually, right? And like hang out with her?
Yeah, yeah. There are a couple times where we were in the same city for a little bit.
Jealous.
But
I'm so jealous.
It's crazy how the connections happen with music. Like, I did a podcast with Louis Vuitton probably almost a year ago now.
Damn.
And I just met him really briefly at Odessa because he was the first opener. I think it was Louis Vuitton and then Sophie Tucker.
Yeah.
And so I didn't like exchange anything with him then, but I told him during the podcast, I was like, I just want to let you know, I saw you open 2 years ago and you're fucking dope and you probably don't remember me, and said hi. And like, he was just being nice, but like that connection, I would have never thought at that time I would have been talking to him 2 years later. And now just like all the crossover between managers and artists in the music industry, it's crazy how that shit happens.
I agree. He's great too. I've seen him in concert a couple times.
Yeah. And the live covers that he puts together. I saw one recently that he did with Grizz, but he puts these covers together in real time and he'll do it on the tour bus or he'll do it in his studio. And he's probably put out some recently. I just haven't checked it out yet.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Like he used to make those videos, which now if he would have like made them on like TikTok or something, like right when it was coming out, he would have been, I think that those videos would have been huge, actually.
Yeah, Louis Vuitton needs to get on TikTok now. He should upload some of those old, some of those old videos would slap on TikTok.
I agree, totally.
This is a question I was wondering for you from the artist side. So if you think about music as a practice where you're going to get better, for example, if a piano player wants to get better, one of the practices they do is scales, where you'll just play the same scales over and over and over again until it's unconscious. So it's going to be different for both of you. So I'll ask Jeremy this time first, as a lyricist and as a rapper, what are some of the things that you practice that would be comparable to a piano player practicing scales that help you get better at rap?
It's a good question.
These questions are great.
Yeah.
Jeez, I think a lot of it just has to do with, if I start to think of something right away, I want to get it down and write it down right away. Because as soon as I lose that, sometimes it's hard for me to go back. And if I think of something, like when Daniel will have a beat playing and I'll just be kind of chilling and listening, next thing you know, like I'm sitting down and I'm writing and putting something down on, you know, on paper. And it may not sound good, you know, 10 minutes later, but at least I can start and get the creative juices flowing. And then I'll come back and I'll think, okay, from what I have, like what sort of direction can I go to make this better? So I never, ever, unless it really clicks, I never stick with the original style or lyrics that I write. I always write it down, what I have in my head, and then I'll come back and I'll say, okay, how can I make this sound better? But honestly, the lyric part of it for me was something that I didn't even know that I could do. It was just like one day we were making songs together, and then, you know, I put something down and I showed it to Daniel. He's like, well, dude, that's like really good. And so it's just something that
naturally gifted.
It's just something that I never would have even thought of doing if it wasn't for, honestly, our roommate and Daniel, because they started it. So yeah, I mean, it's just continue to build upon what I have in my head originally and don't settle for what I have written down right away.
I've been trying to get him to freestyle more for practice.
No, like he gets mad at me.
Make like beats, you know, like on the fly and like just...
That would be sick, having like freestyle quarantine sessions. That'd be fucking dope. I've seen some rappers do live streams where they just have people drop in topics, and then if they see a topic they like, they'll just start freestyling on the live stream. That would be pretty cool.
What are you doing?
I mean, that would be pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. I'm like not the best freestyler. Dude, and I know Daniel's just going to say, you just got to, you know, practice more, which yeah, I do. But I think like for me, when it comes to writing lyrics, I want to really, really, I want people to relate to it and what I'm writing. So when I'm thinking of songs and making lyrics, I can really dig deeper into like my mental psyche with that and what the song and the vibe is making me feel when I actually take the time to write it down. I know freestyling can help with the creativity part of it, but as far as lyrics go and making it like resonate with people, I do such a better job when I actually like take the time to write it down.
I don't know if this would work for freestyling, but the live stream where people are dropping in topics reminded me of a joke that Dave Chappelle told in one of his recent specials. He said he kind of keeps some fishbowl in his house with a bunch of punchlines and he'll just reach in and grab out a punchline. And I think the punchline from the special is something along the lines of, and then I kicked her in the dick or something like that. And so he had to write a joke for that punchline, and it was just random, whatever one he pulled out. So then he wrote 100 different jokes to that one punchline. If you had something that was just topics for lyrics that you just picked out of a fishbowl and then you had to write 4 lines about it or something like that.
That's actually a really good idea. Maybe Daniel can put those in a bowl for me, because if I do it myself,
we've done random word generator before.
Oh yeah, we have done that before.
But I think we could step it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Daniel, for you, the same question. If you think about a pianist practicing scales, what is something from the production side where you can just drill into your head, or you work on the same repetitive thing to where you're just unconscious about it? Like you can do it in your sleep.
I think first of all, I do try to get better at instruments still. I'm going to be buying like a drum pad soon and like want to get really, really down with like that and also getting better at piano. But I think the biggest thing that any producer works on really hard is sound design. When it comes to the software plugins that you have, like you have to really know them in and out to get the kind of sounds that you want to deliver into your music. And so it takes like, just like you know Microsoft Word or Microsoft PowerPoint like really well to like a way greater degree.
I wish I didn't. I wish I could take Excel out of my brain now that I don't use it anymore.
Me too. No, I totally feel that. You just have to, you have to get to that same level with software plugins as a producer so you can really understand how to like get the right kind of sound that you're going for. So yeah. I try to continuously like figure out also if there's other instruments or other software plugins that we need, because there's a million out there. And as a producer, it can be really daunting to know what you really need to get to like really get your vision on paper, you know?
You guys can both answer this question separately because I'm sure you'll have different opinions, but who is the most underrated music artist alive today? And no friends or anything like that.
Do you have one off the top of your head?
Someone that deserves a shout out on a podcast that a lot of people may not be familiar with.
Oh, we might have the same one, but I have one in my head.
You can go first.
I think one of the more underrated artists is Cosmos Midnight.
Oh, they're great.
I don't know if you know Cosmos Midnight at all, but...
No, I've never heard of them.
They're really actually good, get a lot of inspiration from them too. And they're super dope. I mean, that's like their style is like super chill but upbeat. And I think that, you know, we look on their Instagram and they don't have like a ton of followers. And it's like, how do these guys not have it? I mean, they're really
dope. Two Australian twins. They got like kind of a similar style to maybe like Young Franco, if you ever heard Young Franco. Mm-hmm.
I haven't, but I'll check these guys out.
Young Franco, I'd say, is underrated too.
Young Franco is very underrated too, also.
Is that your answer, Daniel?
No, it's not going to be my answer. My answer is going to be somebody who's a little bit more out there, I guess. It's a band called To Another.
To Another.
Yeah.
I have to check these guys out too.
I think they're based out of Europe, but they have like just this really well drawn out style of like funk, like really like new funk sounding, but it's like super chill. I it's hard to say, but like, it's, you just got to take a listen to it, To Another. They only have like 3,000 followers on Instagram.
I can't believe that.
They have like, I think only 500,000 listeners monthly on Spotify, yeah. But they make some really good shit. I'm a big fan.
Can I throw in one more?
Go for it.
Is that cool? This is actually, he's a huge influence on my rap style.
But if you say one more artist, you have to commit to doing a live stream freestyle.
or at least
do the fishbowl thing where you just have Daniel create random topics and then you just pull one out and do freestyle. Yeah. You could practice. I'll allow you to practice on Daniel first before you bring it to the live stream.
Let's do it. Code of the friend. Do you know
code of the friend? Uh-uh.
Coda. K-O-T-A.
Coda the friend.
Coda. I don't know. I mean, chill rap is something that we both love. And all I got to say is just go listen to him.
Listen to Colorado by Coda the Friend.
Colorado by Coda the Friend.
Yeah. He gives a lot of inspiration to me. And again, like just want to try and emulate as much as I can, but have my own style.
What's a mistake that people are likely to make when they start making music? And what should they do to stop making it?
First of all, you're going to think that the first things you make are dope and are shit.
Dude, they were dope. What do you mean, bro?
Like, I swear, I've made maybe like 500 ideas at this point. You know, I've only been producing for under 2 years and so many of them are shit, but you have to make awful music to eventually make good music.
I completely agree. But yeah, we started this project before East Main and we thought it was sick. Like we thought that like in the beginning when we first did, we were so pumped about it. And we were
3-0.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were happy about it. But then we realized that's not gonna do it. I mean, it's just not gonna work.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I agree with Daniel 100%. I was gonna say the same thing. Don't don't think what you first make is going to be it. You gotta, it takes so much time. I mean, it takes time to figure out what kind of style you want to go with.
How to get
what
the sounds.
Audience do you, yeah, the sounds, what audience you want to appeal to. There's just so much that goes into it. And I think maybe artists that the mistake they make is whatever they do right away is what they go with and they don't experiment enough.
Yeah, you got to experiment a shit ton.
I agree. I actually got into a Twitter conversation with a producer named Slow Meadow, who's more in the ambiance scene, but Black, the rapper Black, actually sampled one of his beats, and he's a dope producer, Slow Meadow. And we were talking about, I think I tweeted something along the lines of, it's most useful, in most situations, it's more useful to be an optimist, especially as a creative, because even though I recognize that at some level, I was very delusional at the start about my own ability as a podcaster, I think that if I didn't see myself as better than I was at first, and I still do to some extent, but I like to think that I'm closing the gap between how I actually podcast and how I see myself. But at the start, if I didn't have that delusion, I think I would have given up and or not tried as hard, because that delusion kind of made me more likely to try again. Whereas yeah. If I was a pessimist and I took the opposite view where I wasn't hopeful about the future and I thought that whatever, it's never going to pan out, then I may not have tried at all. So I think having the optimistic point of view gets you to take the action necessary to come to get better. But then paired with that, you also have to have self-evaluation, like what you were saying. You have to have a self-awareness where you recognize, okay, I know that I think in the moment what I'm making is great, but it can be better. And then 10 years from now or 5 years from now, when I look back at this, I may not even believe that this was me, because I'm going to have gotten so much better. So I kind of think about my future self, where I know where I want to be and where I am now. I don't know if you guys felt like that
100%.
At all.
No, I totally agree with that. You know, I think the delusion is also like a product of your ambition, because you want to be so good at it. It was actually funny. We were watching, have you ever seen the movie Blow?
Yes, I've seen it many times. I fucking love Johnny Depp.
It's a great fucking movie. Jeremy and I watched it last night. I think he said, like, I realized that my ambition far exceeded my talent always. You know, I think without wanting to be something great or wanting to be this level of talent, you won't ever strive to work as hard as you can to get there. And I think you're right. It's really important to have the self-awareness to realize you're not there yet, or you're going to continue to get better. But yeah, that ambition, that delusion is actually like a necessity, because only those kinds of people are the ones who are actually going to get there, because they think that they can.
Yeah. But I don't think we've never had the mindset of we're going to be the best ever. You know, we're never going to be. So we use that mentality just to continue to improve on our skills. And I think Daniel is actually the one. East Main, we just kind of kept between us for a while. We didn't really tell anybody. We kept it to ourselves because we just wanted to do something together, because we knew we would work well together. And one day Daniel was like, yo, do you want to just like maybe make work on a project with just us two and see where we can go with it? And of course I was like, yeah, of course. I mean, we have nothing to lose. Why not? And I think that he took that moment and just realized he didn't see our last project going anywhere, and he wanted to do something different. And ultimately, you know, he has to take a lot of credit for where we are right now, because, you know, without that moment, I don't think we would be here. And he's looking at me like that. Yeah. I mean, it's true. Because I never would have thought of, you know, doing something just us two, because I don't know, it almost didn't seem like it was a possibility. But then we just did it, and now we're moving forward.
Yeah, I definitely think the delusion is necessary, and it's best paired with self-assessment and being critical of yourself, or else it kind of gets out of control and then can backfire.
Yeah, I agree.
So shifting to more of the music industry side, what is something that, if you had the power to change something about the way that the music industry worked, what would you do to make streaming and playlist placement more just and fair? So if you were to, you know, spin the roulette wheel and it was just random where you didn't know if you were going to start as a bigger artist or a smaller artist, effectively, like if you were going to be randomly placed on the spectrum of super well-known to not well-known at all, what is a change you would make to make it fair for people no matter where they end up? So that if you're super well-known, it wouldn't just be you all the time, but if you were at the bottom and you were good, you had a chance of blowing up.
Honestly, when I think about this kind of thing, I always think about what SoundCloud used to be like when it was first coming out and really prominent, and how you would be able to find so many new artists that were up and coming with like remixes and small little things. And mm-hmm. I thought that was the dopest thing until like it started not really becoming as useful anymore to use as like a discovery method. Mm-hmm. I think that Spotify, although they do have some good playlists and algorithms, I think they could do a better job of having the discovery be a lot more broad than it currently is. Because I think you do get a limited selection of what you could find. So it might be harder for artists like us to come up unless if we really put a lot of promotion money on our end so people can really discover what we're doing. Because if not, it's really hard to do it as an independent artist, I think, to get really discovered by a mass amount of people.
Yeah, and that's the most difficult thing. I would agree with Daniel. There's a lot of options, but the options are not always the best options. So we don't even have music on SoundCloud. So that's not even something that we focus on. And I think a lot of artists that are up and coming that want to make a name for themselves, they don't realize that it's expensive. You know,
yeah, it's really expensive
to try and get your content out there. You can't, I mean, SoundCloud is free, but that's not, I don't really think that's really relevant
the software
anymore.
Yeah. And the instruments.
Software promoting your music. I mean, it's constant. So
making the music is just one part of it. Yeah. You know, like I mean, all the other parts are there.
That's 50% of it is the making the music. The other 50% is marketing and spending money on it. So yeah, I don't really have another answer because Daniel hit the nail on the head with that.
From a listener perspective, I think I would change the algorithm a little bit. I would tweak it. And I have no idea how algorithms are put together. I'm an algorithmic fucking idiot. So they're much smarter people than me working on this. But I know algorithms like Google search and Spotify are designed to show you more of what you search for. And I think that that's great. And then it populates your page with things that you like. But I would also like 10 to 20% of the time for it to just recommend something completely random. Like not what I search for at all. Like if all my shit is hip hop, show me a classical song on my Discover Weekly just because. Or just have a like, this shit is random. Like this is what you don't listen to. Or like on Google search where it would have, you know, I know you search for this, but this is the opposing point of view just so you're presented with it, something like that. So I like how algorithms give you more of what you want, and the more you use them, the better they get at that. But I think where algorithms fail in some sense is that you don't have the random selection factor. You don't have the random discovery factor of things just popping up into your life unless you just say, fuck the algorithm, I'm going to go searching on my own.
I agree with that completely. You're on point.
I look forward to Fridays every week because Spotify has New Music Friday. And when, you know, sometimes I'm just disappointed in it because it'll recommend and also get recommendations for songs. And because I was such a big fan of rap growing up, I still have a lot of recommendations for like that kind of music where I still listen to it, but I don't listen to it nearly as much as I used to. And so the recommendations that I get are more tailored towards the rap than what I want to listen to now. So,
yeah, you have to go out of your way to really find some, like, at least from my end, I try to find stuff that I could sample all the time. And I would love to get what you're talking about, where it would send me like a classical song or like a random 70s or like 80s song that I haven't heard before. But it doesn't do that. Like if I need to find something like different, I really have to go out of my way to search for it.
So as a listener of music, I've never made anything that I would consider music or would want anyone to listen to. But as a listener of music, I can listen to more music. I can read about music. I can write about music and I can interview artists. But what is something that you grasp as a music artist that I can read about and listen to, but that I'll never fully intuitively understand because I don't make music? So something that's not in the numbers or the streams or the interviews, something that you understand better because of your experience making music.
I think there's just this intangible thing that you can't measure. That's just the creativity within somebody else. You know, when you're watching particular people play and understand like how they can create something from scratch just in their head, like watching Anderson .Paak being able to drum while he can sing, or
it doesn't make sense to me.
Crazy. Yeah, just there's people that have these gifts that are beyond anything that anyone can measure, because it's not like a measurable thing. It's just unique and intangible. And I think that it's something that I wish we had more of. You know, I think we try to outsmart other people, but creativity is not something that you can learn. I feel like it's something that you're just born with and naturally gifted with.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I'd say this is probably something that you can relate to as well, but just the vulnerability that you have to go through is a big one.
It's a great answer.
A lot of us, it's hard to listen to yourself talk. A lot of people have that anxiety when they hear themselves talk. So imagine listening to yourself on a track and like trying to make a vocal. That was a huge struggle for me. And sometimes it still is, but I've gotten more comfortable with it, just honestly because of the support that we've been getting. But you're so vulnerable as an artist. I mean, we haven't gotten too many negative comments, but we've gotten some. I mean, you just got to brush that off and just continue to push forward and figure out, you know, what's best for you. And you'll, no matter what you do, not everyone's going to like it. So Daniel being vulnerable with his production and myself being vulnerable with my lyrics and how it sounds is a really hard thing to overcome sometimes.
Yeah, I think as an artist, you know, when you put something out, you're saying like, this is like what something I've created. This is the best I can do. Like, this is me right here. And the thought of, you know, a lot of people could reject that or not think it's good enough, it puts you in a very vulnerable place as a musician. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something I've learned to respect so much more of other musicians over time than I didn't before I was creating music, because you're really putting your heart on your sleeve out to the whole world.
Yeah. And real quick, I mean, There's a lot of musicians and artists that I don't really listen to. It's just not my style, but I respect them so much just because we understand what it's like to go through that and put your music out there. And we know that not everyone's going to like East Main. We know that. Mm. So I respect that with any artist in the industry.
I feel that for other podcasters, especially the bigger ones who may say something stupid and slip up. And if they had to go back, maybe they would say it differently. But then it becomes news because a million people listen to the episode. As a podcaster, I think about all the hours and all the stupid shit that I've recorded myself saying and that I've put out there, and that people don't realize. I'm sure it's different from a music perspective, because you're basically taking everything and trying to like get it out into this more compact form. And it's just like a different style of creativity. But for podcasters, it's like, if I just accept the fact I'm going to be a podcaster for life, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of recording hours out there about me. And I'm definitely going to say some stupid shit, and I already have. And so I feel for the podcasters that get their shit kind of nitpicked and pulled out of context and then put on CNN or front page of Vogue or whatever website, Variety or whatever. And it's just like, this person's fucking racist or this person's whatever. I'm just like, yo, that's one line out of thousands where that person has also presented the other point of view, and yeah. and you didn't bother to post either any of that. And the vulnerability stuff, when I first started editing the podcast, I hated my voice, and I still do to some extent now when I listen back to it, because I think I sound so much more different in my head than yeah. and then when I actually hear it, I kind of think like, oh, that's my fucking voice. Like I thought I sounded more manly than that. I thought I had a deeper voice. Like in my head, it sounds so fucking official. And then when I listen to it, I don't know if numbing myself is the right word, but I definitely have to prepare myself to think, all right, for the next hour, I'm going to hear my voice. And I just have to kind of turn off that switch in my brain where I'm going to fucking edit it and whatever. If I don't like it, stop being a pussy and just make it sound good.
I had to put a lot of trust in Daniel because I was pretty insecure about it at first. And he would tell me, dude, this sounds really dope. And I'm like, dude, in my head, I'm like, I don't really know. I'm struggling with this. But you just have to, yeah, you have to get over that mental part of it. And then once you do, I mean, it just makes it so much easier. But yeah, it was definitely a struggle. So I can definitely relate to you in that sense.
Would it be fair to say that as music artists, as people that love music and then take that extra step to create it, that you have a deeper connection with music and find music more beautiful than the average person who maybe listens to it but doesn't take that next step to make it? Would you say that is accurate?
I think that's true with anybody, you know, like who plays baseball, when they watch somebody who has a really good swing or a really good mm-hmm. like curveball, anybody who like does ballet and watches somebody do ballet, they're probably going to be more appreciative of like the specific movements mm-hmm. they're doing. You know, I think that's true with us in music. We hear, and now I hear like every layer in a song and how it mixes together well, and maybe how somebody's voice is like actually amazing, when before I used to just think like, oh, they got a good voice. They're a pop yeah. singer or something like that.
For just the listener, what would you say to articulate some of that beauty, some of the things that you find more beautiful that cause you to want to make music?
I think, gosh, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is every song, there's so many different layers and so many different steps you have to go through to make it sound the way it does. And one of the things that if I could say to anybody is, and people might hate me when I say this, I am not a fan of a lot of rap today, because I think honestly, like the lyrics are just kind of, they're not really that great. They're just, it's like a couple words that just fit to a hard beat.
It's like mm-hmm. a continuous loop.
Yeah, it's just like a continuous thing. And again, like I mentioned, I respect anybody in this type of industry because it's difficult and you're vulnerable. But I think creativity has gone down a little bit in a sense with as far as lyrically. And honestly, like sometimes the production. But if I could tell people one thing, it's don't really focus too much on the major part of the song, whether that's the chorus lyrically or, you know, some awesome part of an instrumental. Think about like the little things. I mean, there's vocal samples that are put in songs. There's, you know, we use things around the house like tongs, like clampers, and like we do, like we make random yeah. noises with things. Like people may not even think about that. Like, and there's so many different things that make your track and your song creative. And it may just go over people's heads because they're just focused on like the main portion of the song. So I'm just like focused on the little things, I'd say.
What's something you've used to make a noise that would surprise people? If you let them know that that's what you used.
We've done this a lot more recently where I'll just be like, yo, like I want to make some different sounding percussion. Let's just like take some shit from around the house, like mm-hmm. put it on the record, like record it and just like see what comes from it. See if we can make like a loop on our own. Jeremy will usually just like find shit. So like, what do you think's so weird?
I literally just walk in the kitchen and I'm like, what would sound like cool on a beat? I've picked up everything from like spoons, forks, like hitting them on the table.
Mm-hmm.
I've grabbed like tongs that you use to like grab you know, flip burgers or whatever.
The measuring cups. What are the measuring cups?
Oh, yeah. You keys.
Like click them together.
Keys. I'll like throw them up and catch them and like to the beat and stuff. It's like whatever you can
ripping
find.
Ripping paper.
Yeah. Oh, I ripped some paper too. I mean, you know, that noise. I just try to find as much as I can. And if it doesn't work, we just scratch it.
Yeah. I heard Phineas the other day talking on a live stream that one of the sounds that he uses. And if you're not familiar with Phineas, if you're listening to this, he is a brother of Billie Eilish and he's also her main producer. He works on everything with her. And I think I don't know if he still lives at home, but they lived at home for a very long time, even when they blew up, so that they always made music in their house. And I heard him talking about the other day how he just took a bunch of matches and was just trying to light them over and over again in the bathroom until he got that good snare sound. And then he used like that match flick for a snare in a song. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's dope.
Yeah. That was really cool. See, it's stuff like that. People, you just got to find a way to be creative. And that's going back to your last question is a lot of people have no idea where those sounds come from or what those sounds are.
Yeah, like what went into making those sounds. Yeah. So.
It's not like, it's not X, Y, and Z. This is what you do and then you're done. I mean, there's so many different steps that are involved. And I think a lot of people may not understand that.
It would be pretty crazy if you could put on some version of like Google Glasses where you look around your apartment and you could just like tap an object and hear the sound that it made or something like that. Or if someone just like made some catalog where I'm sure producer, like you obviously have your own personal catalog, but it would be cool to have some public thing where if you were thinking about using something for a beat, but you didn't know what it sounded like yet, you could just click on it and check it out.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Should start that.
Should.
Yeah.
Heard it here first.
New VR app.
Exactly. Experience firsthand producing. What's the most absurd view that people that you respect would disagree with? The most absurd view that you hold that people, say you take the 10 people that you respect the most, that they would be like, yo, that's fucking crazy. Like if I said Iggy Azalea is the best rapper of all time, people would be like, yo, that's fucking, like you never talk again. Like you're fucking trash.
I have one.
Go for it.
Yeah. And it has to be something that you actually believe is true. Still, like today, if like
I know 100%, and I know it's something that Jeremy doesn't agree with, and a lot of people around me, and that's that. Jeremy's gonna laugh when I say this, but I think Avatar: The Last Airbender is one of the greatest shows of all time. And
oh my god, this is so good.
He thinks it's stupid, and he thinks I'm a nerd for it. But
I don't. Here, the thing is I didn't really ever grow up watching too many cartoons. And as I've gotten older, I didn't really, you know, go back.
What's SpongeBob though?
Dude, SpongeBob is another level. Anyways, this is your time.
It's an amazing show on Nickelodeon when I was growing up. Rewatched it when I'm an adult. And I think it's a sick show. And I think it's a dope world that they created. But, you know, like everybody who I talk to about that, except there are occasional people who I talk to who are like, yeah, that show is fucking dope. But most people don't agree with me on that.
I don't disagree.
You're just not a fan of the show.
No, I think the show is great. It teaches young kids very good life lessons.
You're using that. You're using the considerate voice that you use with people that you don't want them to think you're crazy. Yeah. Listen, I don't think you're crazy, but I mean, maybe you should stop accusing me of cheating on you in your dreams or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like so, that you use with your girlfriend.
Yeah.
No, I don't think you're crazy at all.
No. That voice.
No, you're totally fine to do that. You're cool.
I still want him to watch it from start to finish though.
But I mean, I've seen quite a bit of it now because he just has it on a lot now in the apartment. So if I were to turn that off in the middle of it, we wouldn't be talking for the rest of the day.
What's an opinion that you have?
What's your version of that?
I was trying to think like that's, I'm having a difficult time thinking of something like right off the top of my head.
He's pretty basic, so.
Yeah, I'm just super basic. Gosh. Okay, I mean, I got one that Daniel's going to probably agree with. When it comes to, it has to do with music. So when it comes to like songs that I listen to, I'm kind of sappy. whatever. As a vocalist, I don't have the best voice by any means, but I love to sing. So whatever, you know, I love Chelsea Cutler. I think she's dope.
Oh, fucking love her too.
Yeah. I don't know, dude, I'll listen to it doesn't even matter what the song is. If it's got like a good vibe to it, it may be, you know, super basic, but I'm going to sing it and I just enjoy it. Like it's something that I like to do. I don't know if that really counts towards what you were asking me, but that's kind of what I was thinking of off the top of my head.
I would count that if it's something, I don't know if it's as absurd as it is maybe unexpected, but I'll allow it. I'll allow it. Chelsea Cutler's I'm a huge fan of hers. So
okay.
If we had to have somebody win that round though, who won that round?
Who won that round? All right, yeah. So you guys are competing during this podcast.
We always compete. It's always a competition. Avatar or Chelsea Cutler?
It's two different. I would say if I'm being a cold-hearted judge, that Daniel answered the question more how I intended it to be asked, but then you also provided insight that was still good insight, but beyond the realm of the question. So if I was scoring it like an Olympic judge, I would have to give it to Daniel, but I do appreciate your insight, Jeremy.
Maybe as we're going through the rest of this, I'll think of something a little bit better.
I'm just trying to be open and honest.
If anything pops up. If anything pops up.
Be vulnerable.
I am, man. So vulnerable.
What's the most surprising thing that you've learned about your craft?
That's interesting.
The most surprising thing, like, between the both of us, like as a group or individual?
It could be individual, something that you've learned about music that you maybe didn't expect to learn, or maybe it could even be a truth that you kind of already knew going into music, but now music kind of solidified that truth to yourself.
For me, something that I didn't realize, my inspiration for making music started first when I was listening to a lot of ambient electronic music like Odessa, like early, like 2013, 2014. And I didn't realize how pivotal sampling was to like just the evolution of music and how much it's changed over time. Something that I do myself is just sample music. So not just sampling vocals, but sampling synths, sampling like just general sounds. That is like the biggest change in music theory or like development of music, I think, just like over the course of the past 100 years, because now like so many people just use sampling as the way that they just create music. And I think it's put a whole different way, like spin on the creativity and just the creative process.
What about you, Jeremy?
I would say, before we actually started making music, I was somebody that didn't really understand what really went into it and making a track. So for me, it's honestly the production side. So like we use Ableton. I had no idea how many different things there are that's involved with making a song. I mean,
like 20 different layers.
There's so many different things. It's like putting a puzzle together, right? I mean, I'm so grateful for, you know, the like a splice we use for sampling, and like we use, you know, a lot of different things. I'm grateful for that because we both like aren't the most gifted musicians, you know, make like playing guitar or piano or whatever the case is. So we have to adjust to that. But I think the production side was something that I just had no idea how hard it was, because I just never, it would never cross my mind. I was just like, oh, this song's dope. I'm going to listen to it on repeat. And just, that's it. You know, instead of, oh, what actually went into making this track?
To end off, I have a question for both of you. And you can, like always, you can answer separately. You can compete with this, with this answer too. So if I listen to all the music that you have ever made, including released and unreleased, if I had access to your full catalog, if I knew you extremely well as a person, knew you as a music artist, just was someone who had this very complex and full understanding of how you come together, what is the hidden influence that I would miss? What's the hidden influence of you, like the underlying influence that people wouldn't know, even if they listened to all your music and knew everything about you?
That's a good question.
Fantastic.
Do you want me to go first or you want to go first?
I can go first. You want to go first?
No, you go first.
You sure?
Yeah.
All
right.
You guys are so cute.
I would say, gosh, this is such a good question.
I'm in no rush, so you can take all the time. Take all the time you need.
Yeah.
Light up a bowl. Get creative.
Light up our, we have a Rick and Morty bowl nearby.
Yeah, we do.
Fuck yeah.
For me, I think it's like just our experiences of life and like where we start and like how we grew up. We've known each other for a long time, but we come from completely like really different backgrounds. I mean, I think we've gotten along so well because we understand that, you know, we can relate in a lot of ways, but we're also different in a lot of ways. And, a lot of, you know, what the lyrics that I write and the vibe that we're giving off has a lot to do with how we grew up and the things that have happened to us. So I'd say like just not, that's probably a huge one is we take a lot of what we have created from past experiences.
What about you, Daniel?
So I think one thing that would surprise most people that I'm influenced on, I know Jeremy takes influence from his own, but I think our personal, like our ethnicities actually on some level. So I'm half Colombian. I'm actually a dual citizen of Colombia. And then the other half of me is Italian and Greek. And one thing that I've taken a lot of influence from, which a lot of my friends don't even like really fully understand this maybe, but visiting Colombia and seeing like a lot of the tribal things that are going on in the plazas with their percussion, I really am influenced a lot by the different kinds of percussion that just are used internationally. I try to take a lot of influence from South American percussion and just general like fusion of that with hip hop. But, you know, I think I try to use that influence that I have to grab a lot of different sounds and influences from different international cultures. Cause I never want our sound or our style to be pigeonholed into one thing. I think that's also comes from also my musical inspirations like Odessa. They use so many different styles and so many different inspirations, I think from different parts of the world. And I think my ethnicity at least inspires me to do the same.
Yeah, that's something I need to do more is get in touch with my own ethnicities, which would be German and Italian. And my nice. Dad's Jewish. My dad's Jewish and my mom's Catholic, and I was raised Catholic, but I do have exposure to both.
But I think that's valuable. Like, hugely.
Yeah, no, it is. I've had an interesting progression because I started out as going through the whole Catholic school experience and then went to Catholic high school and went through a phase where I was super religious. And now I would probably be what Richard Dawkins describes as a de facto atheist, where I acknowledge the possibility of God, but I live my life as though God doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I actually feel more meaning now than I ever have. Just like being grateful for things in the moment. And not saying that there's no sort of higher power, just in the way that the Bible describes God. I think there's like no fucking shot that version of God exists. But just in terms of getting in touch with my ethnicity and just international cultures as a whole, something I definitely need to do more. One of my favorite podcasters, Tyler Cowen, who has a podcast called Conversations with Tyler, he mentioned that sometimes I think for a period of almost 8 years, he said, he listened and watched Spanish news. And he said it was more about just looking at other areas of the world and seeing how other people process the same information we do, but just from another perspective, more than actually learning the language. Because I don't know if he's fluent in Spanish, but I'm sure he definitely has picked up on it from doing that. But I thought it was really cool that like just having the news and seeing images that you don't normally see on a daily basis. And then if you have a translation, you can see something happens in America and this is how we take it. And then another country, how they view what's happening in America. I thought that was really cool.
That's super interesting. I have never thought of doing that, but that sounds super dope actually.
So where can people find your music before we end off? Where should people go? Who should they follow? Give me all the hashtags and ads and shit like that.
They should be following, is it East Main Music or is it East Main?
East_Main_Music on Instagram.
Yeah. And we are, all of our, we have three projects out. Our latest one is Glass Sunset, two songs. We think it's really a big step for us in the right direction for our style of music and what we're going to continue to try and grow off of. So check that out. We now have a total of three projects on Spotify and Apple Music and Amazon Music as well, right? Am I missing anything?
No. The major platforms, I'd say anyone can stream them.
Tidal. You need Tidal?
Yeah. And for anyone listening to this, I'm going to link all the social accounts and streaming links in the description, wherever the fuck you're listening to this podcast. So you can just check that out. But thank you again for taking the time to hop on. I had a fucking blast with this conversation and you guys are welcome back anytime. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Auxoro. If you haven't already, please hit us with a 5-star rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. This helps us appear higher in searches, which means more people will find out about Auxoro. Other ways to help get the word out is telling a friend, tagging us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, writing a blog post, or supporting us with a donation on Patreon. We are a completely independent platform and we're grateful for every listener who supports this podcast. Thanks for coming along for the ride and I'll see you guys next time.